Is Steve Bannon the second most powerful man in the world? Time magazine asks that question this week in a cover story about the White House chief strategist who's been described as aggressive and brash. Time editor-at-large David Von Draley wrote the piece and joins us from Kansas City. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And first of all, aggressive and brash are actually nice words that have been used to describe Steve Bannon. He's also been called a white supremacist, including by the House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and many others. What's true?
Well, aggressive is definitely true. Brash, I think, is true some of the time. He can be extremely charming. So if you were to YouTube his name, you'd find some speeches where he is very winsome. White supremacist, I think, is I haven't found the evidence for that. But has he at Breitbart, particularly where he's executive chairman or was until recently, have they exploited the energy of white supremacists? Yes, they have.
What about anti-Semitic? Is that true about him?
I don't think so. I think he enjoys shocking people and will say outrageous things about all sorts of groups, including groups that he belongs to himself. This is a man that I don't think until very recently pictured himself necessarily being part of a presidential administration. And so he's not a person who's spent his life preparing for, a Senate confirmation hearing.
Well, how did Steve Bannon and Donald Trump link up with each other?
Through a very wealthy conservative family from Texas called the Mercers, Robert and Rebecca Mercer. They're major donors to the Tea Party movement, which Bannon became a champion of after the financial crisis of 2008. They brought Bannon into Breitbart.com, right-wing media platform, after the death of the founder, Andrew Breitbart. It needed leadership. They were major shareholders. And Bannon made Breitbart a major platform for Trump's campaign. And when the campaign in August of last year was floundering and needed leadership, the Mercers suggested to Trump that he should bring in Bannon.
And right now it appears that they're pretty close. They're kind of on the same page about a lot of things. How tight is their relationship, Trump and Bannon?
Trump is interesting. He's famous for – he likes to have competing groups around him vying for his attention, proposing alternative ideas. He likes what might generously be called creative tension in his group. And Bannon speaks to one part of Trump. On one side, he's a very practical businessman, a kind of a can-do, fix-it sort of person. The other side, he pictures himself – leading a movement, being a historical figure who is going to really significantly change the Western world. And that's Bannon talking. That's the Bannon side. In that half of Trump's brain, Bannon occupies a huge amount of space.
Well, what exactly does he want to do? Because you write that Bannon is in it not for the money or position, but to change history.
Exactly. And that is what makes him so unusual. He's very wealthy. In a little deal way back in his history, he got a small piece of the proceeds of Seinfeld, the TV show. And he has this idea that every 80 years or so, the world goes through a major turning. A huge crisis comes. And everything, all the institutions of the past are washed away and new institutions are created. The American Revolution was a turning. The Civil War was a turning. World War II was a turning. And he thinks that the cycle is happening now and that he and Trump are going to be instruments of it.
And does he believe that a war is coming?
That's the big question. He has. He said at Breitbart he had a radio show, among other things. And let's stipulate that talk radio sometimes has to, you know, be provocative to gather and keep an audience. But he has said on that radio show that he sees a shooting war in the Middle East coming. He sees a war in the South China Sea as inevitable. Obviously, either one of those things is a big deal. And I think it's reasonable for the American people to, you know, look for some clarification. Was that provocative radio talk, or is that really what he sees as necessary?
Well, he, Steve Bannon, declined through a White House spokesperson to speak with Time for this story, but you were able to learn quite a bit about him from people who have worked with him. What did they have to say about him?
He has some really big fans. He's clearly very intelligent. He's creative. He's a forward thinker. He also, by all accounts, has a volcanic temper and can be abusive. He's a very hard charger, a hard worker. He starts earlier and works longer than most other people. He's had a number of different careers. He's been in the Navy. He's been an investment banker, both at Goldman Sachs and on his own. He's been a movie producer. He's been a website provocateur. And now he's the chief political strategist for the President of the United States. He's succeeded at every one of them, which gives you the idea of a very unusual, very creative, very intense man.
Do you get a sense of what the power dynamic is between him and Kellyanne Conway and Reince Priebus, the chief of staff?
My sense is that they're highly competitive with one another. I think they all respect each other. Reince Priebus is he was chairman of the Republican Party. He's come up through the Republican Party. He is a party guy, and he's knows how to operate in Washington. Steve Bannon was born a Democrat, became a Republican. Then in the financial crisis of 2008, really adopted a pox on both their houses kind of attitude, that both the parties are complicit in everything wrong in Washington, and they both need to be brought down. And so he's much more of an outsider than Kellyanne or Reince.
One more thing I want to ask you about. You write that the key to understanding Bannon is to understand what happened to his dad, Martin Bannon. What happened to his dad?
Steve Bannon comes from a working class family in Richmond, Virginia. His dad worked for the telephone company, first as a laborer, worked his way up into management, and had a little nest egg after raising five kids. And the financial crash of 2008, very nearly wiped him out, as it did so many people. And Bannon had come from the banking industry, from Wall Street, and understood how it operated. And he really blames the crisis primarily on the unreasonable risk-taking by the banks. And he looked at his father paying the price for this crash and his former colleagues getting off kind of scot-free. You know, in this way, he's sort of on the Bernie Sanders side of the analysis, where are the bankers going to jail? Where are the bankers losing their homes? And after that, he became, we got to bring this whole system down sort of guy.
So should we assume then that he had nothing to do with the selections of people like Steven Mnuchin and Gary Cohn and all of these Wall Street people being put into the Trump administration?
Yeah, I think we should assume that. This is the evidence that as influential as Bannon is, he's not the president. He's not a puppeteer pulling strings. Donald Trump is the boss and has his own thoughts. And we do, I think, see in those appointments, those would not necessarily be Bannon's picks. Yeah.
That's David Vondrelli, an editor at large for Time magazine. His latest story, the cover story, looks into Steve Bannon's power in the Trump White House. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for reading.